Well, hello everyone, and oh my goodness, I am so excited for this next interview. And I know I say that, but this individual that I'm going to interview is so special. I'd like to consider him my brother from another mother, partly because when I met him, the brain connection was just so special. This individual is a business, wealth, and health strategist. He helps you transform your life by helping you transform your mind and utilize the resources to achieve your success. So utilize the resources that you have to achieve your success. That is bold. This gentleman has a story of survival that is unlike one I've heard in a very long time. Actually, probably unlike one I've heard ever. And the commitment that he and his wife, Rachel, have to each other is such a love story. It is such a beautiful journey of trying over circumstances. You know, when life comes down your street, you either lay down or you rise. They have risen. He is a businessman. He has years of experience in the direct sales industry, so network marketing. And he's just a beautiful soul, a brilliant man. Please welcome Mr. Johnny Davis.
Thank you so much for having me today, Suzanne. You're so kind. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that warm welcome.
Oh, you know what? You are so welcome. And you know, I met your beautiful wife, Rachel, and you at an event we were both attending. And from that moment I met you guys, it was game on. I was like, I love these people. And it's because you have just such a deep commitment to not only your own success, but the success of other people and the success of our people, which is huge for me. Because, you know, you and I have those conversations. I want to start this interview with giving you an opportunity to share with everyone listening your journey and your journey from, you know, a very critical night. And as we talk, we'll just bring people along and have them just have an experience of your transformation. So I'm going to just give you an opportunity to start.
Okay, awesome. Well, I kind of have to start from this point. Before I even kind of get into the story, I just want to let people know that, you know, prior to any of this happening, that which I'm about to explain to you, I want you to really get this part. I'm someone who's been pretty much athletic my entire life. You know, I played sports growing up. I played football and basketball in high school and college. I never did any illegal drugs a day in my life. I don't drink or smoke. And my diet was never poor. I never had a problem with weight issues or any major illnesses at all. So the story that I'm about to tell you, you know, I want to kind of preface it with that so that you can kind of understand, okay, things happen even though you quote unquote may be doing all of the right things. And so my journey started at 34 years old, where, you know, unbeknownst to me, I was diagnosed with a heart ailment, idiopathic cardiomyopathy, which is a fancy word for heart failure, heart disease. And I had no idea exactly why that happened. The doctors had no idea why that happened because of what I just described to you earlier. You know, I had never been sick. I had no blood sugar issues, never been overweight, never used any illegal drugs or things of that nature. The typical factors that would cause a person's heart, you know, to go into failure. And it was not a genetic condition. And so we didn't understand exactly how this was possible. How could a young, strong, healthy, virile young man be so sick with a weakened heart? And, you know, that left us, I was in a quandary for years and years and years. And I did everything that I possibly could do to find a solution because outside of following the doctor's orders and outside of taking my prescribed medications as was directed, I've always been the proactive person and decided that I was going to take charge of my health and find a way, find something that had to be out here in the realm of natural medicine or alternative medicine or even through nutrition. There had to be something that I could do on my end to help strengthen my heart, because everything that I've read from that point on regarding people that were dealing with CHF or congestive heart failure, it was not a great prognosis. It wasn't projected that I would live past 55 years old in most cases. I mean, it was just really gloomy, all the research articles that I've read about this issue, because I really wanted to understand exactly what it was that I was dealing with and, you know, how I could actually get a hold of this before it got a hold of me. And so I started to look at all these different areas of nutrition, things I could put in my body from a supplemental standpoint, minerals, vitamins, changing my diet, so on and so forth. And it led me down the pathway to a much healthier lifestyle, you know, really brought to my awareness the need to put quality nutrition into my body and to make sure that I stayed on top of my supplements and such. And I did that, you know, between 2006 up until 2012. You know, my heart never regained full strength. And I can tell you, I've tried a myriad of different products, from different vitamins, minerals. I changed my diet to the heart-healthy diet, and I exercise regularly. So I did all that I could do within my power to help strengthen the functionality of my heart and to keep me off of this heart transplant list. My heart improved, but it didn't improve. It never got back to full strength. You know, the measurement of your heart strength is actually measured through what's called the ejection fraction. And the ejection fraction is a measurement of how much blood your heart is squeezing throughout the body. And a normal heart functions between 55 and 70%. That's a normal ejection fraction. Well, when I was in heart failure, mine was less than 10%, which qualified me for a heart transplant. And over the course of the next 6 years, my heart increased 39%. But 39% was still low, but it was better than 8, and I was functional. And so I was able to live my life and conduct business, so on and so forth. And but I was still operating. I was functioning with a very low heart function, heart strength. And so, long story short, I go back to the doctor in November 2012. To look at my echocardiogram results, and he gave me some really bad news, you know, and I felt great. I had just left the gym feeling great, feeling strong, and I go to the doctor's office to see my results. So I'm expecting to hear some really, really good results, and he said, Johnny, I don't know exactly what to say. You know, your results did not come back the way we thought it was going to be. And I said, well, what is it? He said, well, your ejection fraction decreased from 39% to 25%. And I said, well, how can that be? I feel absolutely amazing. I feel strong. I feel great. He said, you feel that way because you're basically operating on muscle memory. You know, you go to the gym, you work out. This is part of what you do. So your body is just responding to what it's normally accustomed to doing. But your heart is functioning very, very, very low. He said, today you need a heart transplant. You need a pacemaker defibrillator in your chest today. He said, but the problem is this. You're 40 years old, you're asymptomatic, and your insurance company will not pay for it. And I said, well, doc, well, what can I do, you know, to, you know, if they're not going to pay for it, well, how much does it cost? And he said, well, it's going to cost you about the same amount of money as a luxury vehicle. And that's not even including the hospital fee, the doctor's fee, the labs, and everything else that goes along with it. So you're looking at well over six figures to have this procedure done. And at the time, I didn't have an extra six figures just lying around in my bank account just for surgery. So, you know, I went and got a second opinion from another cardiologist. And he said, okay, well, here's what we can do. We can try to augment your medication and modify the dosage. And we can actually hopefully, you know, maybe get some greater results if we increase the dosage of this particular medication that you're taking. And I said, okay, great. And I followed that regimen for the next few weeks or so. This was November, like right around Thanksgiving. And December 24th of 2012, I actually suffered sudden cardiac arrest. And that's when everything just changed. You know, I had no idea what happened. I didn't feel anything. It took place 3 o'clock in the morning. My wife and I, we were sleeping. And she said that I reached over and I shook her. And I don't even recall doing it. But she thought I was having a bad dream. And she turned on my, she started calling my name. And she noticed that I didn't respond. And so she turns on the lights and she saw my eyes rolling in the back of my head. And she immediately called 911 and told her what to do as far as administering chest compressions and such. And so she began the process and only to witness me take my last breath right in her hands and just die. And there was a period of not having a pulse or oxygen to my brain for over 16 minutes. And
wow.
So for me to be alive today without any brain damage is a pure miracle from the Lord. Four firemen came over to the house, and they each took over from what she left off. And they did 300 chest compressions on me each, for a total of 1,200. And then I was shocked 6 times with the defibrillator. I started breathing, but I never regained consciousness. I was in a medically induced coma for 2 days. I spent 9 days in the hospital. But while I was in the coma, the doctors told Rachel that, you know, it's really nothing more that we can do for him. He's in a coma. He may not wake up. You just need to be prepared for that. He may not wake up. Or if he does wake up, he will definitely, more than likely, not be the same person that you knew before, because there was so much time that elapsed without him having oxygen to the brain. You may want to prepare to be his caregiver. This is what they were telling her on Christmas Day. And mind you, we had just gotten married 2 years prior. So earlier that year, January, she took me to the Dominican Republic to celebrate my 40th birthday. We had a blast. December of that same year, I was fighting for my life. So that's how fast things can change. And from that point on, Suzanne, there was a lot of prayer and, you know, just people praying for me all over the globe. And miraculously, on Christmas Day, I woke up.
I think what's interesting, having spoken with Rachel, was that she fought. She was like, this is not happening. And it was prayers. It was positivity. She was focused. Your wife, you know, you fight in your own way, but this woman fought. She was not, you know, you can be told something. She was not accepting that. She was like, okay, this is not happening.
Yes, yes. She did. You know, that's what she describes. You know, she said it was a fight between her and death, and she just was not going to lose. And thankfully, she fought. You know, thankfully, she had that mindset, and thankfully, she didn't give in, because I honestly believe today I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be here without her. You would not be talking to me today if it were not for her.
Wow.
And so I woke up on Christmas Day. I didn't have any brain damage. It took a little while for things to kind of reset. I didn't just wake up and just start talking like I'm talking right now. There was a process where my brain kind of had to reboot, if you will. But once I went through that process, you know, things kind of came back to me, and you know, I had to learn how to walk in the hospital and all these different things they had me do before I had my the heart surgery. So that's what happened. You know, that's the kind of long and short of the story. And I mean, there's a lot more to it, but I'm giving you the short version today.
Wow, you know, I'm sitting here and I know you, and I'm still, and I've heard the story before, and I'm still in disbelief, right? Because that's just the magnitude of what occurred. So as this occurs to you and of course to your wife Rachel, and you're working your way back, and how does an event like this change you and how you view the world?
You know, I had an experience on the other side. You know, when I crossed, when I was out of my body, I heard a voice that told me that it was not my time, that I couldn't stay where I was. And I recall not wanting to come back. And I felt so wonderful and so safe and so secure and so loved that I didn't want that feeling to stop. But I had to leave. I had to come back. And when I came back to my mind, my body, you know, everything just kind of changed. I really came back a totally different person. I came back a totally transformed person. It was as if everything that I had done before, I no longer had any interest in doing. When it came to business, when it came to certain ways that I thought about things, it was like the old Johnny Davis died and the new one was born right there in that second. And so today I look at things totally differently. Talking about having such an attitude of gratitude, you hear that phrase a lot, but really understanding that, you know, gratitude opens up the doorway to infinite possibilities, you know, to change the world, you know, looking at life through a love lens and not looking at it through a cynical lens. And you see there's so much taking place right now today in the world of, you know, politics and all these racial type of situations that are happening across the world. You know, people are getting killed, so much violence, so much hatred, you know, so much division. And when you look back on it and you're saying, you know, I look at it from a totally different standpoint. I don't let it bother me. It irritates me, but it irritates me for a different reason. It irritates me because people don't understand that the things that you're bothered by, it doesn't exist. What you're looking at is not real. The fear that you're letting control you is not real. Because once you transition to the next realm, and once you're out of that space that you call reality right now, none of this matters. This doesn't exist. This is totally manufactured, and you're operating. You're not even responding. You're reacting. Mm-hmm. You're being controlled. You know, the way that you think, and the way that you talk, and the way that you speak, and the way that you treat people. Especially if you're being, you know, if you're one of those individuals that are always in front of the television, you're always on social media. People don't understand just how much they're being programmed, and they don't understand just how much power they actually have, how much beauty they really possess inside.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something that just blinds them from being able to see that. And I just look at it from a standpoint of, it just really makes me sad to see how people treat each other. And they're focusing they're focusing on things that are so minuscule that don't even matter.
You know, it's interesting because you talk about the attitude of gratitude. And I just want to focus on that because I think you're making such an amazing point that allows the perspective that you're talking about. Most people, when they talk about the attitude of gratitude, they actually talk about being grateful for the good things that are happening in their lives, right? And so, but to really understand that the attitude of gratitude, to be grateful for what is, right? And sometimes what is isn't so pretty. Sometimes what is just what is. But I think in the middle of gratitude is this thing called love. But there's also this process called surrender, right? Where I surrender to what is occurring from a place of love and from a place of acceptance and from a place of gratitude. And in that moment, when I sit in that place, a new thing opens up. There's a new possibility that opens up. And I realize that the journey that I've just been taken on is for that possibility. But if I'm not grateful, I miss it. If I don't surrender, I miss it. If I'm not in acceptance, I miss it. And what you're talking about is all the stuff that gets in the way
right.
of us surrendering to possibility.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's just a distraction. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's a distraction that prevents you from reaching your higher self.
Mm-hmm.
And once you reach your higher self, then you understand that, you know, that none of these things really, really, truly, truly have any power over you.
Mm-mm.
And because you don't know that, you know, you're most people don't know that. They're just being controlled. They're letting their ignorance really get the best of them. And it's actually, it's getting the best of them, which is bringing out the worst in them. And they don't realize it. And so now when I see things totally differently, you know, from dying and coming back to life and coming back to me, a new person, because I don't see things the way that people see them anymore. I operate from a place of that love, because that's the key to it all. I mean, you touched upon it when you talked about surrendering and being able to accept it. That's where it starts. That's where it all begins. You know, understanding that, hey, you know what? I'm not in control of anything. I'm really not. And once you let go of that and you say, okay, I'm going to surrender to the highest power of everything that is good, and let it flow through you, and let it just transform your thinking. It's a beautiful place to be, and I'm so thankful that although I had to go through such a traumatic and tragic situation, I probably would not have the same reverence and perspective that I have now had I not gone through it. And so for me, I'm thankful in a twisted sort of way. I'm thankful that I went through this experience, because now I'm able to kind of, you know, I have something that I really feel that, okay, I can share with the world. I can share this message. It's up to you whether or not if you receive it or believe it or let it get inside you or not. But it's something that definitely needs to be talked about. It needs to be shared, and it needs to be said.
You know, as I listen, you're talking about true power. And what I mean by that is when most people talk about power always fascinates me. Partly because of my background, but power always fascinates me, because most people think of power as this force outside of them or positional power, which means I have a title and I'm able to tell people what to do. But most people don't understand this power that lives within us. And what you're talking about is the power that's ignited within you. Every journey that I go through, every journey that you go through, cultivate, if we allow it to and we surrender to the journey, cultivate a learning, a lesson, a growth that actually gives us a new birth, a new level of power. And what you're talking about is a power of knowing your capacity, right? Knowing what you're capable of. It's a power of actually understanding your purpose. And that only occurs through the messiness of a journey, if you will, right? Mm-hmm. And most of us want to avoid the messiness of the journey. So when you say, I'm grateful because you're now sitting in your purpose. You're now sitting in an understanding of what you were meant to share, be, do in this space, right? That your access to that was something that you had to surrender to. But as you come through the other side, you are empowered and you have a new level of power that is true power. Because it's pure, it's within you, and it's something that no one can take. And I think oftentimes we run from the opportunity to find that.
I agree 1,000%. I agree 1,000%. You know, your mess becomes your message, right? And you said you want to avoid the messiness. But that's exactly what you need in order for you to discover who you are, bring you closer, to introduce you to your higher self. Because everybody was born for a specific purpose. You know, we're not born to do everything. We have a specific task that we were born to do. There's a problem. There's something in this world, in this time, in this realm right now that you were born to solve. That's why you're still alive. That's why we're all still alive. So there's still something that the world needs from you today. That's why you're still here. Otherwise, you would be gone.
That's truth to power right there. That is so, so crystal true. And you know, when I speak, I have this image of some feet walking on fire. And I tell people it represents that I've come through the fire, right? And I've come out the other side. And I go, but understand that that heat, that pressure that sometimes you feel like you're under, is the same heat and pressure that's cultivating a new version of you, the next best version of you. So I'm always grateful for all the fires I've had to walk through, all the things I've had to rise above, because in those moments, and because I've learned to sit in gratitude, in those moments, I'm grateful because I know that what's going to emerge is another best, better version of who I am capable of being, and that I'm being prepared for my next journey, my next mission, my next purpose. Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely.
So here you are with a new perspective. A new perspective on the world. It's like the new Johnny emerges. What does the new Johnny now step into, begin to do?
Well, the new Johnny, number one, takes much better care of himself. Not that I didn't before, but my awareness has been heightened even more so to pay closer attention to the things that I expose my body to, the things that I expose my mind to. I'm very mindful of those things now, and I do all that I can possibly do, can do, to keep as much negativity and poison, whether it be physical or spiritual poison, you know, out of my being, so that my vessel can be as strong as possible for me to do what I need to do. The message that I have to share with people in terms of just learning how to love more and worry less, and learning how to surrender, and learning how to be thankful for what you have and focus on being and less on having. And I think that we get so consumed with this idea of consumerism. We want to buy a bigger house and more cars and have more money, and I'll be happy when I get this, and I'll be happy when I do that, but not realizing that the happiness that you search for is not external. It doesn't come from an external source. The happiness that you're searching for is internal. But if you stop and just stop focusing for 1 second on trying to have and focus on just being, so we're human beings, not human havings. So focus on being. Focus on your inner self, and discovering that part of you that wants to come out, the greater you, the higher you, the you that understands that's walking in your power, the you that understands what your purpose is. And you'll see that your life will become much easier when you have a clear vision and when you have purpose, when you understand the purpose for your life. Your life will not seem so overwhelmingly complicated, because once you're clear on what it is that you want to do, you know exactly what not to do. You know exactly what not to go. You know exactly what not to read, because the vision that you have for your life, your purpose, it chooses your friends. It chooses what you read. It chooses where you go. It chooses what you do. It chooses everything. So focus on that. Focus more time on discovering the being, discovering who you are, and less on the acquisition of things on the outside. And you'll discover that the more you fall in love with discovering who you are, that is the gift that you bring, and you can operate in a manner of you bringing the gift that you were born with to the world, then you start to see change occur in the world. When everyone is working toward reaching their higher conscious self, the world will become a much more beautiful place. Ignorance cannot thrive in the presence of knowledge and enlightenment. And so if we focus on that, putting the best stuff in our bodies, feeding our bodies what it needs in order for it to function, feeding our minds what it needs, that brain food that we need in order to become a better thinking, you know, highly focused, fine-tuned machine that we are, if you focus on doing that, you'll see that things will start to get better. You're going to start to attract a different energy. You'll attract a different caliber of individuals into your existence, and you'll see your whole world literally change in front of you.
You know, first of all, that what you're talking about is so big, and I think most people don't even have a understanding of their capacity when they take responsibility for themselves. And I'm not saying to anyone who's listening that you're irresponsible. I think there's a different level of responsibility when you don't get stuck in excuses, when you don't get stuck in what's going on outside of the world, but you're taking responsibility for the mastery of self, right? And I love what you're saying in terms of, you know, one of the first things you do is you take better care of yourself. And what you're talking about is physical, emotional, spiritual. And you're mindful of what goes in your body, what you eat. You're mindful of what you drink. You're mindful of who you spend your time with. And you're mindful of what goes in, like what you read and take in. And I really want to just highlight that, because we live in a day, as you said, of social media. We live in a day where there's so much news. There's so much information. We're bombarded with so very much. And I think oftentimes we're not present to how that bombardment shifts our energy, creates fear, creates anxiety, creates all these things that that then impact our beingness. And you know, if you come to my home, I mean, most people come to my home and the first thing they do is they go to my television, they turn it on, and nothing happens. And they're like, "Oh, your cable's down." I go, "Well, I don't have cable." And they look at me like, "Well, what do you do?" Well, one is I read a lot. I will read before I would do most things. But two is, once I understood what you were talking about, Johnny, I don't have cable because I'm very selective of what comes into my home, what I invite into this space. Because my home is my sanctuary. This is where I go to you know, rejuvenate, to center myself, to stay grounded. So I'm very conscious of what comes into that space. Because I want to be very mindful of what is programming me, if you will. And I'm very choosy about what programs me, because I know that if I'm not mindful of the programming, I'll get caught in anxiety, I'll get caught in fear, I'll get caught in scarcity, I'll get caught in what we don't have, and it'll affect my being now. And I think what you're sharing with everybody is so such a gift. This is a health and wellness summit. This is the foundation of wellness when you're talking about it. I can't take care of my body when I'm being bombarded with things that don't allow me to take care of my body. I can't take care of what I eat and when I'm being bombarded with things that don't allow me to take care of what I eat. I can't take care of what I think when I'm being bombarded with things that are not positive for my thinking. What you're talking about is paramount. It's huge.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't have said it better.
Well, I'm just recreating what I heard. So you did say it beautifully. Wow. Okay, so and then you have this whole thing about consumerism. And I think particularly for well, for everyone listening, but for particularly for members of the Black community, this is so key, right? And I want to dive into this, and I know I can go there with you because it's Johnny, and we've had, you know, some of these conversations. But consumerism is an attempt to prove to the world my value, my worth. That's in my opinion, right? So I buy the car, I buy the house, I go to the right school, I register my children in all the right activities. I call it the keeping up with the Joneses syndrome, right? Busy keeping up with the Joneses, not realizing that the Joneses don't care about me and they're not thinking about me. But I'm keeping up, I'm keeping up, I'm keeping up. And I love what you said, because when I was in that cycle, Johnny, I was exhausted. And life was painful. And life crashed for me. But what I do get in what you're saying is the minute I stopped looking for external validation and I started working on Suzanne and I turned my light on from the inside, people began to see me, but they saw me. They didn't see all the trappings of me. They saw me. And so you're really talking about us all being willing to do the work that turns us on from the inside, turns our light on, and then we're truly seen and truly felt and truly experienced for who we be, not what we have.
Exactly.
That's exactly. A gift. That's a gift.
It really is a gift. And, you know, when you, that's the message. That's the message of spreading that, you know, to our people, because many of us, we are so consumed with consumerism because that's how we define who we are, like you just said. But I can tell you this, when I was lying on my deathbed, the last thing I thought about was how many cars I had, how big my house was, or how much money I had in my bank account. The only thing that I wanted to, that I thought about was how much time I had left. What I was going to do with the time. Can I get more time? I wasn't ready to die. No, I wasn't ready to die. I was only 40 years old. I just got married. There's so much stuff that I wanted to do. You know, we don't even have any children yet. You know, it was about time, Suzanne. Time. And so when you understand that is the most valuable thing that we as human beings have is time. It's not the money. Money is an idea. Money is a concept, but people are caught up in this chasing a concept. Because yes, we need the money to live and to buy food and all that kind of stuff. But if we lived in a world where it was all about taking care of your fellow man, all the things that are being created today will still be able to be created. All you had to do was really just remove money out of the equation. If we remove money out of the equation, do the resources disappear? No. Does the knowledge disappear? No. Does the raw materials disappear? No. It's still there. So the only thing that determines whether or not you get this or you get that is this concept of currency. Well, it's just a concept that you can't take with you when you cross over. The Egyptians tried. They couldn't do it either. So if you understand that, listen, it's about what you do with the time you have, the quality of the life you live, the impact that you make on the lives of other people, and the value that you bring to the world. That's what it's all about. And all this other stuff, all the things that you are in search of, all the trappings of success that you mentioned, well, that'll just come by default. Because you'll be recognized as the best in that particular field. You'll be recognized as an expert in that particular field, and people will elevate you to the level of leader. They will automatically follow you, and all of the trappings of whatever comes with that, all the success and accolades and such that you that the ego needs to feel in order for the ego to feel validated, then that will happen. That will happen by default.
Mm-hmm.
But we first must turn away from this concept of, all right, I need to impress you. You know, to buy things that I don't need or can't afford to impress people that don't care. You know, dying and coming back to life enabled me to grow up. I grew up. and I didn't care. And to this day, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care that I don't have the fanciest car. I don't care that I don't have the biggest house. Because that's not what makes me, that's not what validates me as a human being, as a soul, as a spirit. It has nothing to do with that. It's just a wood frame with bricks surrounding and plastic pipes. That's what a house is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm way bigger than that. You're bigger than that. You're way more powerful than that. So why do you let something so minuscule define who you are? And we get wrapped up in that all the time.
You know, what's really interesting is that we live in a society, and I spoke one of the talks I did. My recognition that we live in a society that validates us because of our jobs, our house, our cars, our those things. And what's sad is they don't validate us for other things. And so it takes the working on self to actually let go of being validated in this very external and superficial way, and to risk being validated for your ingenuity, your contribution, all those things. And for me, my biggest learn has been that I can follow status quo, and I can go get a job, and I can go get the big house, and I can drive the fancy car, and I can do all of that and get validated that way. When I did that, I was empty, right? My life was very empty. When I was willing to create from a place of my excellence, from a place of my ingenuity, but not only create, but also gift it to the world. Oh, gosh, scary, Johnny. Scary, scary, scary. But the level of value I got and I gave, that reciprocal relationship, was unlike anything I'd ever experienced because it was of me. Right, and I think most of us, absolutely, and I think most of us, all those trappings, in my opinion, are distractions from what's truly possible, which is me finding out what is my brilliance, me finding out how I'm so unique, me finding out what's so special about me. And knowing that the world is waiting.
Absolutely.
And that my responsibility truly is to gift my brilliance to the world. And to risk gifting my brilliance to the world. And when I got that, let me tell you, life got turned on. And you know what I mean, right? Life got mm-hmm. juicy, big, wow, undescribable. It was like, really? And I've been missing this the whole time? What have I been doing?
It's a beautiful thing when you discover it. I tell you, it's a beautiful thing. Because ultimately, Suzanne, what you just said is what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a level of growth that one must go through or grow through to get to that level. And you mm-hmm. learn how to get to that level by going through that mess.
Absolutely.
And so if you want to avoid the mess, you avoid the lesson that you need. You avoid the very thing that's going to elevate you to that next level. You got to go. The only reason why we know, if you think about it, right, the only reason why we know who King David is because he slew Goliath.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only reason why we know who he is. So if there's no Goliath, we don't talk about David. So when a Goliath enters into your life, don't pray it away. Don't wish it away. Slay it. Because that's how you're going to be remembered. That's how we'll know who you are, by slaying your Goliath.
Now, that was when a Goliath enters into your life, do not pray it away. Slay it. That's like tweetable. That's like rewind. Post it. That's awesome. Because it says so much in a small sense. So, Johnny, I could talk to you for, like, I could just keep rolling, right? What's next for Johnny? What do we look for? As everyone's listening, I know they're going, Johnny Davis, who is he? Like, what do we look for next? What's next?
Well, I have a couple of things in the works right now. I actually will be releasing my book within the next, let's say, month or so. Next 3 to 4 weeks, it will be out. The title of my book is called I Am Still Here, From Heart Failure to Heart of a Champion. And in that book, I share with you, you know, a little bit more intimate detail about who Johnny Davis is and some of the struggles that I've encountered over the years, but the principles that I've learned throughout my career to help me overcome those challenges. Some very sound personal development principles, business development principles that help me overcome what in most cases would be like some extreme, you know, insurmountable odds. I believe that the reader will definitely take a lot from that. They'll walk away feeling empowered, inspired. They'll walk away feeling 10 feet tall and bulletproof, and understanding that, you know, when you do come across that Goliath in your life, slay it. Slay it.
Mm-hmm. We are talking to Johnny Davis. Book coming out in a month, I Am Still Here, From Heart Failure to Heart of a Champion. Wonderful. Where can the audience connect with you?
You can connect with me on Facebook at Succeed with JD. You can also go to my website at succeedwithjd.com. I'm on Instagram as well, under Succeed with JD. And Twitter as well, under Succeed with JD.
Fantastic. And Johnny, I know you being who you are and always totally about contribution, I know you have a gift for our listeners. Can you tell them a little bit about the gift?
Sure. The gift that I have for all of you is my 10 key principles that I live by that helped me remain job-free for the past 13 years.
That's a gift. Because, you know, one of the key things about this whole health and wealth, health summit, if you will, is it is truly about freedom. And, you know, we're talking about physical, financial, emotional freedom. Right, physical, emotional, spiritual, and financial freedom. And that, to me, is what health is. One of those pieces are out of alignment, your health is off, right? So I think being job-free is ultimate freedom, when you be able to own and manage your own time. Johnny, I just want to thank you. Thank you for who you are, for your wisdom, for growing up, as you said, because you truly are a gift. You truly, truly are a gift. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. We've been speaking with Johnny Davis.